Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back to the podcast. Today, I have the episodes that you guys love the most, and those are the love stories. So get ready to be inspired by my amazing guest who has found love. This is Courtney Bass Sherrison. She is a badass HR executive. And when I say badass, you're going to hear, okay? Just slight thing that she never really talks about. Also, you know, kind of small things. She's got 2 degrees from Harvard, a BA in history, an MBA, tiny little things that Courtney just likes to gloss through. She's also a certified yoga teacher. And Courtney is here because she worked with us in 2 separate coaching rounds. And importantly, she's celebrating her 4-year wedding anniversary, has a 2.5-year-old, and is here to tell you that she gets where you are, because just a couple of years ago, she was sitting where you're sitting. So Courtney, welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. We are so happy to have you, and your story is really inspiring. That's why you're here.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I love the podcast and I love my story, if I can't say myself. So yes, very excited.
Oh my God. And how did you find out about us? I forgot.
Yeah, it's a great story. My mom and dad were watching television and saw you on the Steve Harvey Show. And my poor parents have been my wing people forever and were the recipient of most of my dating complaints. So after seeing you on the show, they were like, you have to find this Bella woman. And I think my mom actually had researched you already. So she was like, here's the website. Here's where you email for more information. She just didn't want me to be on her couch anymore complaining.
That's Paula.
Yeah,
that's right. I remember your mom. I remember her name.
Yes.
So yeah, absolutely. I love when I'm friends with clients' parents on Facebook. There's nothing better, right? This is a family affair here at Smart Dating Academy. So
it that's is.
Mom and dad watching Steve. God bless Steve Harvey. Yeah, what a funny guy. Great guy. Brilliant guy. What a gift to, you know, have worked with him, which led me to meeting amazing people like you. So let's dive in. I mean, okay, so you're single, amazingly educated, living in Chicago. Tell us where you were when mom and dad saw me on Steve.
Well, you know, I think I was on the middle of a journey of dating that had been long and had felt really arduous and exhausting.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that I was sitting on my parents' couch many nights complaining was a testament to that. And I think I had gotten there because dating for me through my teens, my 20s, and then that at that point, my 30s had just been kind of crappy. I think that I view dating through the lens of my own identity, and I identify as a Black person. I identify as a woman, a cis gender woman, a straight woman, and I identify as someone who is fat. And although I've not been fat my whole life, I've had that identity for a lot of my life. And I think of it as a beautiful identity. I'm proud of it. But I don't think that a lot of those identities that I hold are supported by the dating world in general in America.
Wow. So you came into this with all of that.
Yeah. And with this deep desire to find a lasting partner. It was the thing that I wanted most in the world. I could have traded the Harvard degrees and a bunch of other stuff if that was given to me. But I also had a lot of fear and doubt that I would find someone.
Man, and you did. you found someone awesome. So yeah, there is, and I remember meeting for the first time when we met around your birthday, if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. when we were meeting.
That's right.
Pre-COVID at the Four Seasons. And yeah, I mean, I think that there are a lot of, I call them, you know, terror statistics that make us crazy,
yes.
especially about, oh my gosh, if you're an African American woman, forget about it. There's yeah. no hope. And, you know, and then if you're a woman over 35 and la, la, la. So that stuff messes with our minds big time.
It does. It really does. And yeah, I was very aware of the statistics, and it, so many things felt like a foregone conclusion around this time that I was dating. And I won't forget this, a popular online dating website, came out with a study that showed desirability based on their data, you know, looking at all of the different matches that they had facilitated over the years at that point. And they ranked, in essence, genders by race, and said the most desirable type of man is a white man, followed by. And at the bottom of the female list was Black women. And I just remember I was on that platform. I was using that platform quite frequently. And just this feeling of like, why even bother? Why bother?
Wow. Wow. And you know what? I'm so glad you did bother.
Me too.
And what's interesting, like you're saying, is you felt really, even when you were on the apps or just in dating in general, because of these identities that you held and were to some extent supported by data, you felt unseen. And just that must have been really demotivating.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And I think what was hard too about it for me is that it wasn't just me. I was surrounded by other smart, funny, interesting, beautiful friends of mine who are also having a similar experience. So there was loveliness in that camaraderie that we could all go to each other and be like, man, this, as we used to say, these streets are rough. Like, these streets are hard. But it also just made me really sad that, like, there were so many of us having this experience.
Amazing that you say that at that point it became such an obsession that you would trade in your degrees. Like, you would just trade in anything at that point. And at that point, you were in your early 30s or your mid 30s?
I was more like in my mid 30s.
Mid 30s. That's right. So what happened then? I mean, so you're in the dating world. Like, give us that.
Oh, man. If I had a dollar for every unique date I went on, I would retire tomorrow. I had the range, to be honest, and a lot of people do. I had a man who peed on the side of the street during one of our dates, just pulled out his junk and started to relieve himself on the street. I had...
Wow. Wait, not that this excuses, but was he wasted? Like, was he drunk, or was that just what he did? When you had to go, you gotta go.
Well, that's what he said when I asked him. We had had a drink, but I do not believe that he was drunk, because I you know, most people don't get drunk off a drink. And he just said, I have to go. And yeah. And I don't know what's worse, that it happened or that wasn't the immediate end of the date, which can just also tell you a little bit about where my mind was, where it was like, well, that's just one strike. If he poops, then I'm going to cancel and I'm going to stop this. But let's see where this will go.
Right. Peeing wasn't
my husband.
A red flag. Peeing wasn't a red flag. You're like,
It was a red flag, but, you know, I felt like I was living on a soccer field filled with red flags. So, you know, how egregious was the red? Not enough to finish, to stop the date. I had some great dates and great relationships as well, but none of them were the right ones for me. And when that became evident, whether it was within the first few minutes or after a couple of years, extricating myself from those situations was always really hard for me, because I'm a people pleaser and I don't like to disappoint. So it was always hard for me to find my own voice while I was dating and be like, oh, I don't like that. No, thank you. Very
That's not okay.
Peeing should be for the bathroom.
Right. And it makes sense. I mean, if you, and like my heart goes out to you and where you were, and there's so many people out there. And to some extent, it comes down to this belief that's not correct, but we're fed by a million different sources of, well, it's because you're just not good enough. And this is what there is out there.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah. And that I had heard the message, so many people being like, maybe you're too picky. So for a period of time, I was like, okay, I'm not going to be picky anymore, quote unquote. You know, I'm just going to accept what comes, and barring violence, you know, I'm just going to work with people and see if things can work out, because I don't want to be, quote unquote, picky.
And then what happened?
Well, then I started working with you and Lindsay, and it was this really wonderful reset for me. It was just this moment to, one, hear some real feedback about how I was showing up. I really loved that you talked to friends and family and asked them the question, why is Courtney single? And, you know, I wasn't surprised by anything I heard, but it was really helpful to hear it, but from people that I know deeply love me.
And remind us, what were the things that stuck out from that? Was it surprising?
No, it wasn't. It just was that I wasn't giving time. I wasn't giving people, men, time to get to know the real me. And that I was letting some things that I do that are not some of my best habits be kind of the default. I think in retrospect, I was testing people.
Yeah.
I was finding small and big ways to test guys to see how committed they were. But the reality is that people don't often like tests.
No.
Surely not in relationships. So, you know, it was kind of a fool's errand.
Wow, that's so interesting. And so that kind of opened your eyes. And I think the 360 feedback that we do at Smart Dating Academy, and for those of you that don't know, because we don't talk a lot about it on the show, is with our clients, we do a elective process where you can get your friends, your family, your exes. It doesn't matter. We turn that over to each individual client. We turn it over to Courtney and we say, email your village of people, right? Whomever you believe has your best intentions at heart and who will be candid, have them send us an email directly telling us confidentially why they think you're still single. And so Lindsay and I look at all of that feedback, and most people, you know, will send us 5-10 plus pieces of feedback. And we're looking for we're looking for patterns, basically. Mm-hmm. We're not looking for Aunt Sally said this. So, or wow, you know what? Marta's really not your friend. That's not what we're doing. It's all confidential, but looking at patterns. And what I find so interesting, and the reason I asked you that question, is I don't think I've seen in 14 years of doing this process with somebody where they're like, I'm just floored that people say that. It was most people are like, wow. What's most interesting is it's like, I thought only I saw that, but mm-hmm. the fact that everybody knows that and can see that is like, oh, okay, right. And it becomes to some extent sort of a rallying cry to change.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And it was interesting because, first of all, I was taken aback at how lovely the things were that people said. So again, it was this reminder of how I'd been underselling myself and devaluing myself. And all of the people, granted, they're my friends and family, but they were like, we love her. She's a wonderful person. She'd make a great partner. And that was just really affirming to see and hear. But it's funny because some of the stuff that people called out as reasons why I might be single are quirks about me that, again, I didn't know that people necessarily had seen as much as they had, but are things that actually I think make me a really good fit for my partner. So there are things that I think some other people would be like, that's a deal breaker for me. I do not want to deal with that from my girlfriend, my wife, my partner. But my husband and I have in common, and we enjoy together, you know, and it doesn't bother him. And so, you know, once I met him, it was a fun affirmation of like, oh, this is the right person for me, because he is not bothered by the things that others have called out as a problem.
I love that so much. And so, you know, you always said Lindsay helped you really reframe certain things, talk about these, because I think these are things that we can all relate to.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that because for years I had been told that I might be too picky and that I had to be more clear on what I wanted and make a list and put it under your pillow and say an incantation. I mean, all the things that people tell single women that are just exhausting. I fell for a lot of them. And so when she asked me, who do you want in your life? I had that list ready. I had what I think I called like the ideal 25 and then the power 15, and the power 15 was like the must and the 25 was like nice to haves plus the must. And she just helped me look at that list and be like, what do you really want? Like, sure, all of these things sound great. Why not? But like, what is going to make you happy? And one of the things that I had on the list was height. I'm a tall woman myself. As I said, I identify as a bigger woman. And so I just felt very certain that a partner that matched with me had to be taller. And I think it was just my own insecurity, frankly. Whenever I was with men my height or shorter, it made me feel bigger, which would make me at times feel insecure. And so, you know, I just had this vision of a 6 foot plus man. And, you know, she was like, does that really matter? And of course, my first answer was like, absolutely, have to have it. But, you know, in continuing to talk with her and reflecting, it was very obvious that like, when I thought of all the people I loved in my life, all the people that I admired, that I respected, it wasn't because they were tall. That was not the reason why.
Oh my gosh. And so, we did that exercise with you about the people that make you happiest in your life.
Yes.
None of them were tall. Right. And it's,
I mean, some are, but that's not the reason why.
Exactly. That happened to just be correlation. It wasn't causation. Yes. Like they happen to be tall because they're my parents
Yes.
It's the things that really made you happiest in your happy relationships. Right. It's like all that stuff, even in the top 25 and the power 15, it's funny how quickly that whittles down and how we see like, wow, okay, this could make dating more fun because I'm going to cast my net out wider at this point because I've got a new list. And so, wow, love can come in a different package than I thought it would.
Yes. Yes. That's right. That's right. It also encouraged me to think about not what did I just want then, but what would I want in the future? Mm. And it's hard to know who you're going to be in the future, but one of the things that I knew I wanted to be was a mother. And I knew that for me to be the best mother I could be, I needed a partner who was really deeply engaged in being a father. Mm. And that made me really prioritize kindness, because I think to deal with children, you have to be kind. You have to have patience.
As Bella falls out of her chair with an almost 20-year-old and 16-year-old.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just starting the journey, but you know, man, you really need those in abundance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kindness and patience are highly underrated in the dating world.
Yes. Yes. And I think I had an approximate adjective on my list, but I don't think it was kindness. And, you know, my husband, when I met him, I was like, oh, this is the kindest man I've ever met. And I still believe that. He is a wonderfully kind person. And lo and behold, he's an excellent father. And he's so kind and tender and patient with our son. You know, that's exactly what I wanted. But I wasn't able to articulate that 10 years ago.
So let's back up a little bit to how did you meet Dan? And you clearly had ups and downs in dating, right? And fixing your picker and fixing your beliefs didn't happen overnight.
That's right. Took years. Right?
It took years. Do you guys hear this? Sometimes you message me like all these love stories. I'm like, y'all, this took years to happen, right? So what are we're talking 4 years, Courtney? Am I overstating that?
No, I think that's about right, because I think our second engagement ended around 2016 and we met and married in 19. So three and a half years. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so you met him how?
So there's a difference in perspective, depending on who you ask, me or him. We met online, according to me. We met on Hinge and we matched. And when we matched on Hinge, he said, I think we have a friend in common and I'm pretty good with faces. And I said, I don't think so. And he said, yes, think hard. And I spent a day thinking about it and realized that years earlier, I had dated one of his closest friends and had met him when I was dating one of his friends. Very briefly, we were connected over email and we both worked at the same company at that time. And so because we were still working at the same company when we connected on Hinge, and because I had dated one of his closest friends, I was like, well, it's good to meet you. We will not be talking any further.
Oh my God. And you knew which friend?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, I did. I did. And that was a friend who I did not have a successful relationship with. Good person, just not my person. And so I was like, I don't date friends who've dated friends. You know, I don't like that messiness. And Dan convinced me to give him a shot and to go on a date.
Oh my gosh. He just basically said, hey, this isn't a birds of a feather. Like, I'm a good guy.
Yes. Yes. I'm a different person. You know, I don't have an issue with it if you don't. And come to find out that before he had reached out to me, once we had connected on Hinge, he reached back out to this person and said, hey, I matched with Courtney. Should I go out with her? And he said, you know, she's special, but sure. Try it, you know. It turns out that my husband had seen me back when we had been connected by email years earlier. And he said, you know, I saw your picture on our internal work, like Facebook, and your picture always stuck in my head. And I always asked that guy after he broke up with you, hey, do you still stay in touch with her? How's she doing? And he would say, no, we're not in touch anymore. He said, but I thought about you a few times over those years. He said there was something about your picture. And so, yeah, it's weird.
And he told you this before you even went out with him.
He did not tell me that part.
Okay. I was like, okay,
he told me that
I love this
later.
Podcast because this I learn all these new little factoids about these relationships, which I love.
See, it's funny because prior to working with you and Lindsay, if he had told me that before we met, I would have been like, it's true love. After working with you, I'd have been like, this is creepy. That's too much sharing.
Right. I stalked you. I know you.
Intimacy is too early. Yes. Yes. But, you know, we met in January of 19 and we were married in November of that year. So it was very fast.
Wow.
We just understood what we were facing and knew that it was right for us.
Right. And you mentioned you wanted to be parents. And so at that point, it can become like when we're 25, you know, people, well, yeah, let's date to cop 2 or 3 years. Maybe we live together, maybe this. But when you are not in that age bracket anymore, maybe a decade later or so, things become expedited to some extent.
And, yes, that's right.
Right. And sometimes it's expedited bad. And you can imagine the stories I hear of people that come into our practice after that. But with yours, because you were well-trained and you knew you had fixed your picker, right? Yeah. And so being on an expeditious path, when you know how to pick, it's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, can I say something about that? Because
please do.
There's a part of the story that's, I think, a little unique. When my husband and I did go on that first date, it was also around my birthday, which I probably note these are important romantic times in January. We were out at a restaurant and there was a table near us that had a young kid, a toddler, and the toddler was being a toddler. And I looked over at the kid and I said, oh, that kid is so cute. And my husband kind of gave a glancing look over his shoulder and was like, ugh. You know, he made a face that indicated he did not think it was particularly cute. And I said, you know, how do you feel about children? He said, you know, I just don't want them. I said, well, I really do want them. And I said, do you think you would change your mind? Because at this point in my dating, we were having the real conversations on date one. There was no need to, you know, like I was just trying to weed people through very quickly. And he said, no, I'm pretty serious about not wanting to have a child. I had a vasectomy a few years ago. I don't want to become a parent. And because I had refined the picker, I was like, I'm not going to stay around and see if you change your mind. Like, that sounds great. We're not a match. We can absolutely be friends. You seem like a great person. Let's stay in touch, but we're not going anywhere. Obviously he changed his mind, but I say that to say, I think so many times we think maybe a guy will change their mind and we stay around waiting for that to happen. And this was the first time where I was like, oh no, I've learned that lesson. I will not stay around. You know, you call me if things change, but good luck. God bless. And they did. And they changed quickly. Like, it wasn't me waiting 7 years to see while I was worrying about my fertility dwindling. He went and thought about it and said, you know, not immediately, but over a couple of months, like, yes, I'm willing to do this with you. So
you gave him, clearly, he says date one, I'm snipped. Yeah. No, it's no bueno, not going to happen.
Yeah, that's right.
And so you're thinking, hasta la vista.
Yeah.
Great knowing you. Should have known because you were friends with blah, blah, blah.
Right, right.
Wasn't going to happen. But something made you say yes to a second date.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I thought he was fun. And I said, you know, I had just gotten out of a tough relationship. I said, you're a good person. We like spending time with each other. We had a good first date. You know, we can spend time together, but we're not going to be serious. I'm going to continue to see other folks. You know, I'm not going to invest deeply. And, you know, he had a similar perspective. He'd also come out of a tough relationship. And we said, this can be an opportunity for us to practice being kind to another person while dating. You know, he was the kind of guy who would call when he said he was going to call or do what he said he was going to do. So it was not this casual, disrespectful thing. It was this nice, lovely thing, but that just was not going to progress past a certain level. And I think we both got to a point after a few months where we're like, oh, we really care about each other. So let's not continue this casualness, right? Because we're starting to feel more than casual. And that's something we said we were a line we were going to cross. And we separated for 2 days.
Oh my gosh. So it's a couple. Okay. So you had your dating funnel going as a good smart dater does. And yes, you caught feelings and you're like, okay, we got to end this. 48 hours later.
Yeah. Yeah. He was like, you know, I know we talked about this, but you know, maybe we give it a try. And I said, let me think about it. And I called my mom.
Paula.
I said, Mom, what do you think? And she was like, give it a try. You know, I know that you're hesitant and I know that it's frightening. The child thing's a big deal. You know, but give it a try. And that was, you know, probably a couple of months after we had met. And then within 2 months, he was talking to my mom and dad about getting married to me. You know, I made it very clear he would have to talk to my parents first, if not as just an old fashioned formality. But, you know, we got together around April of that year. And in July, he went and asked my parents for my hand.
And where does the baby thing shake out at this point?
At that point, again, this is a very complex story.
He comes back 48 hours later. Can't live without
you. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. At that point, he still was, you know, to be honest, I was going through my own fertility stuff. I was doing egg retrievals because I was in my late 30s and I wanted to make sure that I was protecting my own ability to pursue my dreams of being a parent.
Yeah.
And I was telling him just as a boyfriend, I'm doing this, FYI. I'm going to be looking for sperm donors. And he said, I would like to be a donor. And I said, that's very sweet of you, but you don't know what you're talking about. First of all, it's not just going into the bathroom with a cup in your case, it's a surgery. And then you would have a child. And even if you signed off parental rights, that child would still be in the world. And he said, you know, I hear that, but I think that you would be an incredible mother and I want to be of help to you in reaching that goal. And so, yeah, it was a weird conversation. I said, why don't you think about it? He came back a few days later and said, yep, I had already thought about it when I made the offer. And we started actually as a dating couple going through that process together.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So his love for you was deep enough. Like, I can't live without her. And I love how he's like, I want to be the sperm donor.
Yes.
You're like, okay, dude. Like, first of all, there might be a technical issue with that.
Yeah. Yes.
Because he had prophylactically decided, I don't want kids. So, right. Here's the thing. What I find so compelling and interesting is he had gone to pretty stark lengths to say, I don't want to be a dad.
Yes.
I'm going to have this procedure. So he came back to you saying, not only do I love you, but I will reverse engineer this.
Yeah.
And okay, I'll be a sperm donor. Okay, I want to marry you. And it all
have a child.
It all just flowed.
Yeah, it did. And as I say it back, and as I've told people the story over years, a lot of people, you know, their eyes widen. It's like, oh my goodness. But as it was happening, unlike so many other relationships in my life where it constantly felt like we were negotiating or I was pushing or I was being pushed. And this just felt like we were making decisions together. You know, we were doing things as a couple almost from the beginning, you know, as a unit.
It was easy. Remember, yes, my favorite word for a relationship. It's easy.
Yes. Yes. Very complicated, but also very easy.
Yeah. Yeah. And complicated by just things that to some extent he thought and then unthought.
Yes. Yes.
Right? Like, okay, yeah, you've been steadfast from the beginning. I want to be a mom, period. Full stop. Mm-hmm. You were open to it in different ways, right? You're not like, I need to be married right now. You're like, yeah, I want to be a mom and I could do this on my own. And he's like, nah, I'll come along for the ride, right?
Yeah.
And his love for you was so deep. You didn't have to control it and you didn't have to change it. But what you did brilliantly is you stuck to your values. You didn't go back to the red flag laden soccer field. Like, oh, it's not a big deal for me. It's fine.
Yes, that's right.
You just were like, here's the oak tree and she's going to stand here in her glory and I'm not going to move. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And look what happened. And you didn't have to control it.
Yeah.
You just said, this isn't going to work for me. And he's like, well, let me change.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, he has, and he's an incredible father, like I said. And I think, and I've changed in deep result of being his wife and his partner. I mean, you know, he in so many ways was a lot of the stuff that I said, oh, I wouldn't date this guy. You know, he doesn't have a master's degree. He doesn't have these things, all these things that were on the list. And, you know, I think he opened my eyes to like what really matters for me.
Mm. And just for the record, is he taller than you?
He is not. He is not taller than me. We are the same height, you know, and when I wear heels, I'm definitely taller. But yeah, you know, there are every now and then, sometimes I'll see pictures of us or I'll you know, walk down the street and I'll be in my heels and I'll be like, oh, this is a unique experience for me. You know, I often did not date men my height. But like, man, it just couldn't matter. Who cares? You know, I did, but I don't really care now.
He came in a different package overall, right?
Yes, that's right.
Different race.
Right. That's right.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I dated people of all different races and I was open to dating people of all different races, but, you know, I wanted to be with someone who allowed me to be my full Black self and who understood the importance of raising a Black child. and having blackness in our lives, and someone who had racial awareness and understood racism and how it plays out in big and small ways in different people's lives. And I dated people of color who didn't fully understand that. And I am married to a white man who I think understands it better than a lot of people and still has ways to learn and grow. And I've been able to help him do that. We are also interfaith. My husband is Jewish, and we did 23andMe, and he's like 99.9% Ashkenazi Jewish. our son is the first time in his family line that things have been shaken up for like, I don't know, 400 years, seemingly 500 years. So that was a shift too, because I'm a pretty spiritual and I have been a religious person at many times in my life. And my husband is as close to an atheist as possible. Wow. He calls himself Jew-ish.
Right. He's culturally Jew-ish.
Yeah, he's Jew-ish. And that was also really hard for me because I really envisioned raising my child in a house of worship. I was relatively open to what that house would be, but you know, I wanted it to be something. It's still something we're negotiating as a couple and as a family. But you know, it was not, suffice to say, the package that he is in was not what I expected.
No.
Not at all.
Not at all, right? And I love everything about this story. Like I said, you came and you found someone who just loves you for you, mm-hmm. full stop, right?
Yes.
And being able to feel safe and seen as you are, it's incredibly rare.
Yeah. And it feels wonderful.
It feels wonderful. Yeah. Oh, I am so beyond elated for you and
Thank you.
Took time out of your schedule to tell us your incredible journey to finding love. And ladies and gentlemen, if you don't have goosebumps on your arms, I don't know what's wrong with you, because you can look at my arms and I know this story and I'm still like, oh my God, amazing. So thank you so much for sharing. Is there any gems that you feel like you just want to leave our dear listeners with that I haven't asked you?
Great question. You know, I used to just bristle when so many people said the things that they say to single women, like, you know, when you're not looking, the right person will come. Like, I just hated all of those sayings and they were just so painful. And so I just want to leave encouragement for all people that, you know, if you're in your single season and you're hearing those things and they're discouraging, like, feel free to ignore them. You know, like, you don't have to ingest the silliness that the world wants to feed single people. You have a choice to say, that's not my story, no matter what the statistics say. And I just think I, whenever people say, you know, when you're not looking, you'll find the right person. I still hear people say it to others. I try to say, listen, don't say that to people. When you're looking for yourself, and you're centering truly in yourself, like that oak tree you were talking about, the right people will find you. You're going to be closer and closer to the people who will see you for that oak tree and be like, man, that's my tree.
And it's not like you haven't been flexible as well. I mean, right? You both have, but you were really focused on the values you wanted and the fact that you wanted to be a mother. And for that, you were like, no, these are deal breakers. But that's otherwise, right. I can give on the height.
Yes.
I can give on the religion. I can give on the race, the being a person of color, whatever that is. So you clearly were like, okay, you're both giving.
Yeah.
And you love
yeah.
each other for exactly who the other one is. And what's more beautiful than that?
Yeah, I agree.
Well, thank you again, Courtney Bass Sherrison. You are, again, a badass and kind, and patient and a total elevator person for anybody that has ever come across you. You had me at hello from the first
Thank
time
you.
We talked.
And same, too. You too.
Lindsay too. So she will be so excited to know that, you know, she had such a big role in your journey.
Truly. And thank both of you for the work you did with me and the work you do with everyone. It's a real gift. You both and your team have incredible gifts, and I'm just grateful that you're out in the world sharing them.
Oh, I'm going to cry. I love you. Thank
you. Love you too.
Smart daters, if you need to make a change in your love life, if this episode didn't inspire you to do something different, I don't know what to tell you. I'm kidding. Just do something. Change it up. Know what your have to haves are. And if you're not sure and they're not working for you, reach out to somebody that can help you. There's lots of resources out there. Talk to your village. Talk to your therapist. Message me. We will help you. This is our specialty, whatever it is. But do something different, because doing the same thing over and over again leads you on. You're just going to be on that soccer field full of red flags. And none of us, Courtney nor I, want that for you. So with that, I wish you all a beautiful week, an inspired week, knowing that you too, like Courtney, can find your Dan and the lid to your pot at any age, at any time, in any state or country that you are. Remember, because I know love exists for you. It's out there. All you have to do is also believe it and take the steps towards making the right decision. So with that, we will see you next week. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.